You're listening to Seek Up, the Yoga Inspiration Show, right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. I'm Keena McGregor, your host, world-renowned yoga teacher, author of multiple books, and founder of Om Stars, the world's first online TV channel. Get ready to raise your vibration and dive into the spiritual lessons from the yoga tradition. Even if you've never practiced yoga before, you'll find kernels of wisdom to help make your world a happier and more peaceful place. So let's dive in. Let's seek up and leave with a little dose of inspiration. Well, this episode is a talk that I gave after a guided primary series that I was teaching for Try Yoga in London virtually. This is a talk I feel that is really appropriate to what many of us might be feeling now. Sometimes there's a feeling of suffering, of senselessness, of helplessness, of hopelessness, whether you think about that from the global perspective or whether you're just going through a hard time yourself. This talk is really aimed at helping you find a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel so that you can apply the lessons that you learn on your yoga mat to making your life a happier and more peaceful place. I hope you enjoy this talk and that it leaves you with a little inspiration to keep practicing, and that you leave with a little bit of happiness and peace in your heart.
There are many things that at first don't make sense, both in your practice and really in life. So there are so many things that when we come into contact with at first may seem confusing, depressing, or even exciting. Now, the teaching on the spiritual journey of yoga is really about staying the course through those ups and downs until it all starts to make sense. You might not see from the perspective that you're looking at, what you could call your vantage point, the point from which you're viewing any series of occurrences, to understand why something is happening. This can be as simple as, why do we have to jump back all these times during the practice? I know I've thought that, you know, why are there all these jump backs? Why can't we just lie down, for example? Why does Marichasana D have to exist? Why are there five Navasanas? Why does it have to be so hard? You know? Well, we can't always appreciate that from the very beginning. It seems like, you know, that the practice was just torture on some level. And similarly, we like to think about the practice as a mirror, a reflection for life. So those same questions about the practice are sometimes mirrored in life. Why does it have to be so hard? Life, you know? Why do good people suffer? Why do we get sick even though we do everything right? Why, you know, where does suffering come from? What is it? Doesn't make any sense. You know, we could design the world without suffering. We think we would. So it doesn't make sense from where we are. But from a different vantage point, from the vantage point of having traveled through either the journey of life or the journey of practice, then we can understand that both the peaks and the valleys are immensely useful for our spiritual evolution. And that if it was only the highs, and if it was only the good times and the ecstasy and the happiness, then we would be one-dimensional, almost like a plastic version of ourselves. And that the learning that we've really come here on this planet to experience wouldn't reach a certain depth. You know, if we only have love and never experience loss, if we only have happiness, never experience sadness, if we only have health and we never even stub our toes, then we miss kind of a depth and a texture. So as the poet William Blake says something that I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not going to say it entirely correctly, but he says, you know, that happiness puts into our soul, it replenishes our soul, and it's sorrows that bring forth. So when we think about that, it's this unique balance between happiness and sorrow, between pleasure and pain. And from the vantage point that we start our yoga practice, many people come to the practice of yoga because they can't make sense of these ups and downs. It feels overwhelming. It feels like we're not really sure what it all means. And that is mirrored in our approach to the practice. We start off somewhat contrary, maybe somewhat confrontational, wondering and challenging everything that we experience. Why do we have to do this? I don't want to do that. Oh, I don't like that pose. I mean, delete that pose. And we go through this kind of contrarian relationship. I mean, some people do anyway. And then if you keep practicing, yoga begins to teach you how to appreciate both the highs and the lows, how to maintain a heart full of peace amidst the highs and lows, rather than thinking that happiness lies in controlling external circumstances. The yoga practice teaches you how to locate your happiness inside of yourself in a place that can be not disturbed by the inevitable highs and lows, the ups and downs, what you could call the vicissitudes of life. From one vantage point, something may appear to be a blessing. Then that same blessing in a little while may again appear to be a curse. And then from a new vantage point, maybe some years later, again, that curse may turn into a blessing. So we cannot say that everything is good or bad, but instead, the yoga practice helps us train our minds so that we can locate a sense of peace, which is beyond or transcendent of the inevitable ups and downs of the mind, the inevitable ups and downs of our reactions to life, so that we don't need external circumstances to be perfect in order to maintain our peace of mind. Now, some people hear that and say, that sounds pretty boring. Sounds like I'm not going to have emotions anymore. I'm never going to be happy. I'm never going to be sad. Oh, no. Accordingly, you will both experience happiness and sadness. That's a natural emotional state that lives within you. And emotions, sometimes strong emotions of happiness, joy, ecstasy, sometimes strong shadow side emotions of anger, anxiety, even depression, are an appropriate response to various circumstances. The difference between the vantage point of yoga versus the vantage point off the spiritual path is that yoga practice will say everything that you experience is transitory, impermanent, and there is a place of peace that can watch and experience the sadness as it arises, that can watch and experience the anger as it arises, watch and experience the happiness as it arises, watch and experience the joy that it arises, and not be identified with it and not be attached to the good times or be against the negative times. In the attitude of attachment, in the attitude of aversion, the mind locks itself into kind of a holding pattern tied into an antagonistic relationship with whatever it's either holding on to or whatever it's fighting against. So, from the vantage point of yoga, a practice is understood to teach our minds, our bodies, you could even say our souls, how to truly remain non-attached. And what does non-attachment mean? Well, you can only practice non-attachment to something that you are, in fact, quite attached to. It's a little bit like thinking about, you know, giving up or renouncing something that you have never possessed. That's extremely easy to renounce or give up. Or if someone tells you to stop eating a type of food that you already hate, this isn't a type of renunciation. This isn't a practice of non-attachment. This is like somebody doing you a favor, you know? So if you, there's a funny example of that. There's a former president of the United States. I think it's a George Bush Senior. And I think when he was president, there was a funny quote that went around that he was saying. He said something like, I don't like broccoli, and I'm the president of the United States, and I'm not going to eat it now. You know, and he said, I had to eat broccoli when I was growing up, and I never liked it. And I'm president of the United States, and I'm not eating broccoli. So if you asked the George Bush to give up broccoli, this would be a favor to him. He's like, oh, Mr. President, sir, we'd like you to give up broccoli as, you know, a statement of renunciation, as a statement of non-attachment. He would be like, great, you're doing me a favor. So if you think about some food that you hate, and then someone says to you, please renounce this food, you would say, oh, no problem. This is not non-attachment, according to you. You have to practice non-attachment to that thing which you are attached to. Now, the yoga practice helps us practice the state of non-attachment by asking you to do difficult things. So whether that's jumping back repetitively throughout the practice, whether that's getting up at a weird time of day to do the practice, whether it's that you have to do these asanas that you find really challenging and hard, that in and of itself is an act of a form of non-attachment. It allows you to let go of your ego's idea of control and then begin to let go a little bit so you can experience a different viewpoint, something beyond the controlling mechanism of the ego, the limited perspective of the ego. And then as you continue to practice, you change. We all do. Things change. Habits that we once thought were so, you know, entrenched into the core of our being seem to slip away. And then that is an easier form of the way that the yoga practice transforms us. For example, when I started practice, I was not someone who would ever get up before like 9 or 10 a.m. I was just not an early riser. If I had to do it to go to work or to a class or something like that, I would, but it would be very painful. The yoga practice was one of the first things that changed in my life was what time I woke up in the morning. And this is a way that from, you know, the original vantage point that I started practice, my original view, I thought it would be impossible to ever wake up early. Well, unfortunately for me, I fell in love with Ashtanga yoga, the most challenging and difficult form of yoga for rising up early in the morning. And very quickly, my entire life changed just from the mere fact that my yoga practice was scheduled at a time that I would normally be perhaps considering going to bed. And then this made a dramatic change on the life. So from the beginning, the first vantage point, oh, get up in the morning. Oh, terrible, terrible, terrible. Never did I think I would be someone from the perspective of enjoying the early morning hours before dawn. But then that changes. Now let's take it to a bigger perspective. That's something relatively easy. Understanding, you know, how the yoga practice changes our lives. But as I said, when we first started this talk, things don't always make sense. From one perspective, when something happens, we can experience it as traumatic, harmful, injurious. You know, it can be something that may feel like a wrong done to us or done to the world. We might think, gosh, I don't know why this is happening. This seems awful. There's no sense to this. Senseless horror, senseless pain. And this happens, you know, in the microcosm of the yoga practice. Anybody has gotten an injury, or anyone's been in an accident in life that somehow has harmed their yoga practice. I meet a lot of students that seem as though their practice is going quite well, only to get into some kind of a life accident, like into a bike accident, car accident, or something like that. And then they have a hard time seeing beyond the suffering of the moment, or a yoga-related injury. You're doing your yoga practice, you're trying your best, but something happens. Maybe your teacher was assisting you and went a little too far and there was an injury, or you had a self-injury. You pushed yourself too hard. This happens to all of us, myself included. And in that moment after, there's this feeling of, why? What is this about? I don't understand. I wish this hadn't happened. It's a trauma on one level. And there are kind of different avenues that have been documented that the human being can take after a traumatic or intensive event. So you could experience the injury, life injury, or yoga injury, or some sort of pain or suffering that seems to not be fair, that seems to make no sense whatsoever. And you might experience that and say, you know, well, this is miserable. And you might continue your misery. And then you can leave with almost like a scar on your psyche, in your soul about the events. And it may last for a long time from that vantage point. You stay with the sensations, doesn't make sense. If you hold on to that, you end up with a feeling of bitterness, a feeling like life has shortchanged you, a feeling of, you know, irresolution, of raw, unprocessed kind of wound, a wound that's never healed in the body and in the mind and in the soul. And this is sometimes referred to as, you know, if we experience a trauma in this way, and then we, after that, have a kind of negative trigger in a clinical sense, or in a, you know, more intensive sort of sense. This is sometimes referred to as post-traumatic stress disorder when it happens into, you know, in a much larger scale than what I'm talking about right now. But we can have our small stresses that never heal. And that's a possibility.
Earth Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If you stay with that feeling of this makes no sense, this shouldn't be like that, and you lock yourself into this against quality and don't ever find your way out, it is possible that from that vantage point, we never shift. And that's not what yoga is about. So if you keep practicing the act of moving, breathing, and going into the yoga poses, being in the space of yoga is about challenging those old wounds and bringing them up to the surface to heal. The second thing that's been documented in kind of psychological study is when people experience a traumatic event that has the potential to change their life, is that they can, after some period of time, return to the same level of happiness and homeostasis that they experienced prior to that trauma. So let's think about that in your yoga practice. So some people, after they have an injury, then they come back to their practice and they reestablish themselves on the same level of practice. Some people, if we take the sort of negative manifestation of what I was talking about, some people, they have an injury. And then I have experienced this, as some people become injured in the practice, or in other, some other way the practice was challenging for them. And then in response to that challenge, they decided to quit yoga and carry a personal beef. It's a figure of speech. They're not carrying beef in their pockets, okay? They carry a personal grudge against yoga for their entire life. Sometimes I meet people like this. You know, I'm a yoga teacher. Just as a side note, whenever I'm not involved in the yoga teaching role and I'm in life and somebody asks me what I do for a living, I try not to say I'm a yoga teacher, because then suddenly it's like it's a doorway that opens for everybody to share every thought they've ever had about yoga with me. And I'm not always available for this when I'm in line to buy a chai. So if it happens, or in the airport, you know, I'm checking in with, oh, what do you do? I'm like, So I usually say I'm an author, because I feel like, leave me alone. You know, as soon as I say yoga, oh, I tried yoga once. This actually happened to me. Then I don't know, I was standing someplace, some cocktail party years ago before the time that we're in now. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a yoga teacher. Oh, yoga. Let me tell you about yoga. I was like, oh, why have I said I was a yoga teacher? I should have said that I was anything else, you know? Let me tell you about yoga. I did yoga every day for 3 years until I injured myself. And then in that injury, and they went on and on about this injury and how they quit yoga because of the injury and still mad at yoga and yoga's terrible. And what do I think about that? I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't have an opinion on any of this. I don't really know what's happened. And hope you heal someday. Like, oh, wait a minute. And it was like, I needed to answer now for the entire tradition of yoga. It's like, I was really just hanging out. So that is an expression. I actually meet a good number of people like that, that they have a grudge about yoga. They quit because they weren't able to meet whatever challenge, whatever difficulty, and evolve through it or with it. So they hold this grudge around it. So this is, again, a small, very small version of a kind of post-traumatic stress response, where we experience a challenge, and then our response to that challenge is bitterness, negativity, hard-heartedness, and we're still, it's like that wound is still within us. And you just mention the word, and you immediately go into a whole thing about it, right? So then there are other people, they could have that same experience, the same exact experience. And then they reach a point where they're back to the same level of happiness before. They're back to their practice. They're, you know, just continuing on the same path. Then there's an interesting phenomenon that has been discovered over, the last, 30 years of psychology, which is that for many years in psychology, psychologists would study the negative states, why people become bitter, why people become negative after these intensive states, and what it would take to get them back to normal. And so they would give out all these surveys of people, you experienced this traumatic event, and then you now came back to normal. So some percentage of the population come back to normal, some percentage of the population stays in the stress response. And then they would do these surveys. It really hasn't been done in the yoga world. These were done in just like general population. And in, in relation to environmental trauma. So if there was a major earthquake or hurricane, or if there was something else that could be impacting in a community, and these surveys would be given to people after a period of time after that specific event. They found, again, there's some people that get the post-traumatic stress disorder response, some people return to homeostasis. Most of the energy in psychology for many years was devoted to studying the abnormality, figuring out, why do these people downregulate? Why do these people go into a worse state after this? And some people, they expected people to return to normal because that was what the majority that returns to. Why are these people going so low? And they spent a lot of time studying that. Well, there was one psychologist, I can't remember his name, or I think actually two of them, that started to notice that there were what they noticed as outliers. So if you have any sort of a study, there are often what's called outliers, which means it lies outside the normal realm or the expected realm of the statistics and the information that's been gathered. So these outliers experienced, and they reported that after some time, after the traumatic event, they were not only back to normal, but in fact, they were happier, and they reported that they had more love and more peace, and they felt better in their bodies, and that their life was filled with more goodness than before the traumatic event. So they coined the term post-traumatic growth. So that became a new focus of study and this sort of birth of the field of psychology that we now refer to as positive psychology, to study what makes those outliers outliers and how can we learn from them? Because do you want to be the person that after your challenge, your difficulty, do you want to just go back to normal, or do you want to get even better? Do you want to let your world shift so much so you can look back at that traumatic event and say, you know what, I wouldn't change a thing because that was the valley that led to this new peak. So I don't want to go back and remove that. That was part of my growing process. And I love who I am today. So I want to include the highs and the lows. I don't need to go back and make the world this antiseptic, perfect place and live in a bubble where everything just feeds me back an image of one-dimensional positivity. I want to go through the highs and go through the lows so that I might be in a low valley and it might feel that there's hopelessness. It might feel like it's super dark down here, but I want to go through that because I know that it's going to lead me to another high, that I'm going to learn from that, learn from the experience. This is a post-traumatic growth experience. And then there's been a lot of studies that actually look at that, not only in the human condition, learn from these outliers. And there are a couple of signifiers that these outliers were able to share about their experiences. It was also looked at from the perspective of the perspective of natural cycles. So anybody who lives in the cycles of four seasons, which we don't have here in Miami, I just arrived back to Miami. We don't have four seasons in Miami. We have hot and hotter. And we have hot with humidity and hot without humidity. Okay. So it's hot and hotter. And occasionally it rains. And we have one day a year that's slightly cool. And people from the north like to call Miami the place of fashion winter, because on that one day that it's cold, the entire state of Florida will dress up as though we are in the Arctic Circle. And we are actually cold for that day. So when we think about the four seasons, we can experience and see the necessity of growth and decay. You can experience the need for winter in those cycles of change. That in that particular context, if winter doesn't come for the north, where that cycle is part of the inevitable changes, then that bodes very poorly for the health of that ecosystem, and honestly, for the health of our planet. If we look at forest regeneration cycles, Now, I know that what's happening in California and the western part of the United States is absolutely devastating. So here's a really good example of that, that it would be so easy right now to focus on the devastation and the loss of life, and that is absolutely horrible. And this is the trauma. Anybody living in the western coast of the United States right now is going through a traumatic experience. That traumatic experience on an individual level, it's also experiencing on a planetary level there. However, from the cycles of nature, as science will tell you, that the burning out of the forest creates the perfect fertile ground for the next cycle of growth. That if a forest fire hasn't burned in a while, it sets up the ideal conditions for a forest fire to be triggered by what triggered it in Southern California and in the western coast of the US, which is that dry lightning. That very fire burns through dried leaves and all of the foliage that shouldn't be removed from the forest, contrary to what some non-scientific opinions seem to be saying, that the idea is that it should be burned through so that that ash can form the nutrients that will create a new cycle of growth. And that without that burning cycle, we wouldn't have sustainable growth. But it's actually what lays the foundation. Another example of that is the flow of lava. When a volcanic eruption happens, it's easy to focus on the devastation. We stay focused on the devastation. We never move beyond that. We just look at all the destruction. The lava flows, destroys everything in its wake, burning homes and cars and civilizations and plants down. But the most fertile grounds almost in the entire planet are the places where lava has once flowed, depositing vital nutrients and rich nutrients and minerals into the soil. So that thick, dark, black ground that we see in, that you see in, you know, places like Hawaii or Bali, for example, is that volcanic soil. So while there is a cycle that leads to immense destruction, we have to understand from the perspective of post-traumatic growth that there is a possibility from a vantage point way further in the future that we would look back to that very moment of injury, harm, and damage and say that event was the very event that produced a positive cycle of change and growth. We could look at that for ourselves individually, and we could look at that for nature and look at periods where nature seemed to be, you know, destructive and destroying. And we can look at that from a global, social, or even a socio-political standpoint. So that from even the darkest of experiences, if we can allow ourselves to tap into the potential to slip into post-traumatic growth, rather than get stuck in the experience of bitterness, negativity, and stress, then we have the possibility to use every step of our journey to further our progress and evolution. Now, you can't snap your fingers and make it happen like that. So this is where some people get it wrong. Like, oh, okay, this is traumatic. Immediately see the good. No, no. To go through the process, think about the process that the forest needs to go through before it regenerates. There was another fire in the Joshua Tree region, I think, maybe early 2000s, maybe late 90s, something like this. I can't remember the name. I was just reading about it. I think it was called the Pueblo Fire. And it burned through so many trees and was so devastating. And it took years before the sprouts of new trees were able to come through. Years before that happened. So it's not the snap of a fingers. And this is why we stay in yoga. If you experience injury, keep practicing. Don't stop practicing. Keep practicing. Because you have to go through that process of letting the ash, you know, fall onto the floor of your own, you know, yourself, and go through that process and wait for time to work inside of you so that you have the possibility to regenerate. You cannot snap the fingers. Every cycle and every experience has its own time. You don't know if it's going to take you a couple months, a couple years, or a couple lifetimes to go through whatever process it is that you're going through. And I have to feel that this is a lesson that we can take into our world. So in the world right now, the state of devastation that we can see, if you just read the news headlines, one bad piece of information coming after another and after another and after another, when we feel it cannot get any worse, then again, a new news headline comes in, and again, it's getting worse and worse and worse. From our vantage point right now, it can be so easy to drop into depression, darkness. You know, we can start to feel helpless and hopeless. Our hearts can be heavy. Not that we should be pushing that away, but to let that in with the possibility that this is potentially a dark night of our soul, a period where the ashes of what once was have been burned down. And to sit with that feels like a loss. And to sit with that and process that, but to understand that within that loss, there is a promise of rebirth, that there is a possibility to take that very same fabric, that very same stimulus that could lead to further suffering, to take that same stimulus and lead to a true cycle of growth and evolution. And that's what I believe our purpose is on the yoga path, both as ourselves individually, once we learn that for ourselves individually, how can we take the experience of trauma, you know, challenge, injury, and harm, and learn to process that within ourselves so that we can transmute that to a cycle of growth, not only returning to the same level that we were at before, no, to let that be the foundation for future evolution of consciousness as an individual. Once we can do that ourselves, we can hold that potential as a model for society, and we can also live and act from that. So a couple of things that you can think about to encourage the experience of post-traumatic growth. The first thing that you could think about is purpose. To ask yourself to think of, what is my purpose and how can I find purpose? To live in a purposeful sense is extremely important. And this is something that we can think of as having a deep connection to a spiritual wisdom, regardless of what religion you follow. If you're familiar with the work of Viktor Frankl in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, one of the discoveries that he found was that the people that had purpose were able to make sense out of senseless circumstances. If you're unfamiliar with the work of Viktor Frankl, he was a psychologist that was in a concentration camp during World War II, and used that time to study his fellow human beings in the truly traumatic and unparalleled circumstance of suffering. And one of the things that he found was those individuals who could tell a story of purpose to their suffering were able to find more meaning, were able to live longer, were more likely to, you know, have survived. His purpose, what he found, was, I'm going to live through this, to tell this story to the world, to make sure it never happens again. And that kept him going, you know, in what is, an unconscionable, unbelievable experience of loss and hardship.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
Now, we can think about that within ourselves. Look for purpose. Look for purpose. If you don't have purpose, look for purpose. It's even a small purpose. What can that be in this moment? To share love, to share a little bit of happiness, to, you know, to be a better person, to look for that moment by moment, to find a purpose. And if we lose our purpose, just take a moment and find a new purpose to live again, to look for that again and again, you know? And that purpose doesn't necessarily have to be a world-changing purpose. This is also important to understand. A purpose can be as simple as to smile a little bit more today, to, you know, be a little kinder to myself, be, you know, a small goal in that way, to understand that is meaningful. Now, another experience or another kind of half of the experience of post-traumatic growth is to be willing to let in an experience of joy. So some people have the idea that because things are difficult, that they no longer are allowed to experience beauty or joy, that they're no longer allowed to laugh and enjoy life because, well, now life is really difficult. Then we should just, you know, we get this feeling of guilt and how dare you be happy even in these times. So those individuals who are able to experience post-traumatic growth were able to find beauty and joy where there seemed to be no beauty and joy, even a small experience of happiness to be able to look for something each day that could brighten their moods, to look for something moment by moment that would tell the story of sort of, you know, transpersonal beauty, a transcendent beauty rather than, you know, just aesthetic beauty, you know, the beauty of a sunrise, the beauty of a flower opening, the beauty of the way that a plant can grow in ashes, where it looks like nothing can grow. These stories of both this combination of purpose and joy are two of the features that I strongly encourage you to cultivate within your practice so that you will build emotional resilience and that when your worldview gets challenged, you know, where the foundation of what you believe gets challenged, this is any stressful event challenges the foundation of what you believe spiritually, you know, emotionally, mentally, that you can start to remember those things. Oh, there's a purpose to what I'm going through. I might not be able to experience it from the vantage point of where I'm in right now, but I believe one day I'll come out of this dark night of my soul, this dark night of the soul, this traumatic period, this ashen ground that I stand on now. And one day it'll make sense and I'll see why I went through all of this and what it was about. There'll be a purpose to this and I will find that purpose. I'll keep going until I find that purpose. And then number two, along the way, I'm going to remember to stop and find something joyful and beautiful every single day. I'm going to allow myself to feel happy, even if I don't feel worthy of happiness, to make that choice, to actually actively look for that. Those were two of the things that the outliers in those psychological studies actually managed to do moment by moment. And I believe this is what we're here in the yoga practice to actually do. I don't care whether you put your legs behind the head or whether you jump back. It really doesn't matter to me. I also don't really care if you stay for all of the counts in every single Navasana, but I want to provide you with enough challenge and enough difficulty so that you can begin to do that mental work of this is difficult. What do I do when it's difficult? Do I complain? Do I, you know, find that it's horrible? Do I want to cry? Do I go into bitterness, resentment? You know, what do I do? Or am I able to come up with a purpose? Am I able to smile in this moment? I'm able to, you know, have a sense of humor in this moment because you're learning emotional resiliency in those moments. So, you know, does the practice have to be hard? I think the answer is kind of like, yes, because this laboratory called Earth that we're all here to learn these lessons on is hard. Another thing I'd like you to think about is that when we achieve a state of homeostasis and balance, when we achieve a state of what we could call tranquility, where everything is good, there's a part of us that wants to just stay there forever. Oh, let me just stay here where things are good. Oh, look, everything is perfectly balanced in my life. Let's just continue this period of balance forever. You know, like a long summer, you know? But the message that we send to our yoga teachers, for example, to the universe, for example, when we are truly in a state of harmony and balance, is that the message we send is that we're ready for more. And although we would like to sustain that harmony, we think we would like to sustain that harmony and balance. We should have periods where we sustain harmony and balance because that allows us to really integrate whatever lessons we've been learning on our path. There's a moment, again, when that sends a signal that we're ready for more. We've learned whatever lessons we're meant to learn. We've gone through that. So now that's a signal, ready for more. You know, there's nothing like being a yoga student looking bored in your practice that can attract the attention of your teacher. If everything is so easy for you and you jump back and you jump through and you look so bored, you're hardly breaking a sweat. I guarantee you, your yoga teacher can come over to you and be like, try this, do this, point your foot a little bit more, do this, do that, do that. Give you all this technique. And then you might look around the room and say, nobody else is doing all of that. Why do I have to do that? Then my teacher did not tell this student to point their toes. My teacher did not tell that person to go through that. They all have it easy. Look, that one's not even doing chaturanga. And I got yelled at
for coming out of Chaturanga too quickly. Life is not fair, poor me. And we could go into, again, that period of why is this happening to me? Poor me, I can't believe it. Life is miserable. Life should always be fair, blah, blah, blah. We go into that. Or we, you know, can learn those lessons. How can I experience this as a chance to rise up and go through that? Now, the best teachers will allow the students to go through periods of challenge, periods of, you know, challenge and growth, and periods of integration and homeostasis, so that we can experience both of those, you know, parts where we're building up, we're breaking down, we're going through, we're balancing, we're integrating. And a good student will also allow themselves to go through those periods with recognition of each part to the journey. So whatever vantage point we're viewing the world from right now, if you feel overwhelmed, particularly if you feel helpless and hopeless, if you feel that the world is a dark, scary place, or, you know, like if you watch the Game of Thrones, if you feel like the night is long and full of terrors and there's no way out and there's no one to save you, you know, then what you can do is you can flip your perspective and change your vantage point and say, well, 100 years from now, imagine if we looked at this moment like this, so that instead of being in the now of the ashes and the falling down and the brokenness of the moment, you can switch your vantage point and say, 100 years from now, imagine if the world looked at 2020 as the time when we made a shift, as a time when we woke up and truly changed our direction. Imagine if we looked at this vantage point and all of the suffering so many people have experienced, so many communities are sitting with during this year. Then imagine if in the history books it was written as this was a time when a new world peace treaty came into the hearts of every human being. Imagine if the generation that was born during this time was truly committed to kindness and peace and compassion on a global scale, taking care of each other and taking care of the planet like has never been seen on this planet before. So when you're stuck into a place of where we are now and suffering is too overwhelming, switch your vantage point so you can find a purpose. Cast yourself out 100 years in the future. If 100 years doesn't work, cast it out 1,000 years into the future, you know, and look at it from that perspective. Whenever you're caught in the ashes, we have a unique potential to be able to retell the story and switch your vantage point so we can experience purpose. We can experience the emotions of what it's like on the other side. It doesn't mean that we're not going to be experiencing the loss, the grief, the sadness, the anger, the anxiety of the moment, but it means that we will have a purpose, a light at the end of the tunnel. We will have a firm foundation planted in the light that's promised at the end of the darkest of nights. So you learn that in the yoga practice, you can apply that in your life. Learn that in your yoga practice, apply it in your life. If you have an injury and the injury doesn't feel like it doesn't heal, then cast yourself out in the future. One day, I know I'm going to learn something from this. You know, one day I'm going to go on the other side of this and I'm going to, you know, be able to understand if you have a shoulder injury better, how my shoulder works. Even though it's difficult right now, one day I'm going to look back on this and it's going to inform my teaching. It's going to inform my body. I'm going to get through this, and it'll give you purpose. Practice that within yourself and then practice that in your life, no matter what difficult, distressful situations you find yourself in. And you do that without invalidating or pushing away or repressing the intensity of what you're feeling right now, so that you can go through that.
Hey there, it's Kino here. I just wanted to take a moment and thank you for tuning in to my show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Your support really means the world to me. I'm inspired by the fact that you're inspired and that you tune in each week and keep the inspiration to get on your mat and keep practicing and make the world a happier and more peaceful place. Remember, you can always practice with me on omstars.com. That's www.omstars.com. If you're inspired to read my books, you can check those out on any available online bookseller. Just search for my name, Kino McGregor. And my newest book called Get Your Yoga On is perfect for beginners. You can check that out. Otherwise, stay tuned and I'll see you next week.